Cowboys.com today.
Get the news on our shows and other happenings by following us on Twitter. Find us at VoiceAmericaTRN or Twitter.com/VoiceAmericaTRN. The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaHealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Do you sometimes feel overwhelmed by life's difficulties or a traumatic experience? You are not alone. Welcome to Inspired Journeys, Overcoming Adversity and Thriving with Lisa Ference. Today, you'll hear from professionals and everyday people who understand the impact of life's challenges and the personal growth and newfound meaning that can come from the healing journey. Listen, pay it forward, and your life could change too. Now, here is your host, Lisa Ference.
Welcome. I'm Lisa Ference, and this is Inspired Journeys, Overcoming Adversity and Thriving. And as always, I'm delighted that you could join me today. I'm very excited about the topic, but I have to tell you, it's a little bit ironic that we're going to be talking about what happens if handling difficult life circumstances in ways that promote healing and forward movement. Because when I went to bed last night, my last thought was, what happens if I wake up tomorrow with a terrible head cold and have to do a radio show? And that's exactly what happened. So please forgive me in advance for sounding like a frog with a sore throat. And my apologies to my guest, Betsy Otter Thompson, for having to be interviewed by a frog today, but I will do my absolute best. Let me tell you all something a little bit about Betsy, and then we'll jump into the show. She's a Philadelphia native with a BFA from the University of Pennsylvania. She worked as an account executive for several Philadelphia radio stations and as a commercial print model. And if you saw her picture, you would totally understand that. She's a very beautiful woman. She's appeared in television commercials in Philadelphia and New York. After moving to California, Betsy struggled and nearly became homeless. And after she recognized her tendency to blame others for her problems, she became accountable and began to recover. She really has a fascinating life trajectory that you'll hear about. She worked for the next 18 years as an executive assistant to an entertainment executive in the film industry. She retired in 2005 and is now writing full-time. And her books include the one that we're going to be focusing on today, the What Happens If I book. But she's also written Walking Through Illusion, The Mirror Theory, Love Parent, Love Human, and You Are What You Think. A very prolific writer with a very fascinating life. Please welcome Betsy Otter Thompson. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm delighted to be here, Lisa, and thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. So I think it makes sense, Betsy, if we begin by having you explain to our listeners kind of what your overarching philosophy is in terms of how you've come to deal with life's challenges.
Well, my overall philosophy is about taking responsibility for all my choices instead of blaming everyone else, because the blaming is what got me almost homeless, and taking responsibility is what turned my life around. And that means knowing that, you know, we're all autonomous to make the decisions that we make, and we all have to take responsibility for the ones we do. It's nobody else forced me to make the decisions I made that got me where I was. And but I had plenty of people to blame before before I took responsibility. I surely hit all the points.
So that's already a very intriguing thing, because on the one hand, I agree with you. I think it takes tremendous maturity and courage, you know, to take ownership and responsibility of the choices that you make. Does that mean that you don't look at some of your choices within the larger context of earlier life experiences and how those experiences and those people may have kind of impacted your choices?
Oh, I think everything that I've ever lived has been right on target for me. I don't recommend that you become almost homeless to find yourself in life,
yeah.
but For me, it worked. And I think that everything we live is on purpose. And I don't think we're ever off target because I think the soul is our souls are too smart to have us wasting our time. So everything that we're living is helpful towards where we're headed. And we have to go through something to get where we need to go. Then we go through it. And that's all there is to it. I mean, I really think we're here to learn that we are very, very powerful beings and that we do create our own life. But we also have free will to take that power in any direction we want to take it.
So maybe it would make sense if you're willing to just share with people something about your own personal journey, because I can hear and I know that it's profoundly influenced your philosophy and the books that you write.
Yeah.
Can you take us through some of the chapters of that journey?
Yeah, well, they start when I was five. My mother was always talking about her grandmother, who she loved very much and was very close to, and this woman had died a couple of days before I was born. And she was always telling me how much I looked like this woman, and even at five, I was having trouble getting along with my mother, so I thought the fact that I looked like someone she loved was a definite asset. So I thought, well, I'll talk to this woman and see if I'm like her in other ways. And I didn't think anything of it. I just, at nighttime, I started talking to her, and this voice responded, and we had these lovely conversations. And as far as I knew, everybody could do what I was doing. And so I went to my older sister, and I told her I was talking to my great-grandmother, and I asked her who she spoke to. And she reacted like probably most normal kids would react, and
right.
teased me unmercifully for weeks. And I was so traumatized because I thought, if this is how she reacted, well, how would other people react if she told them? And so I stopped doing what I was doing, and I completely let go of the gift. And it wasn't until I was in California and almost homeless that I decided that my philosophy certainly wasn't working for me if it was getting me almost homeless. And I had spent most of my life, as I said before, blaming everyone else for my hardships and my problems and the fact that two marriages had failed. Everything was somebody else's fault. And then I heard the Course in Miracles. I went to one of Marianne's lectures and heard the idea about taking responsibility. And I started applying it to my life. And one of the things that I took responsibility for was this gift. And I remember sitting in my one-room roach-infested apartment in California thinking, you know, it wasn't a prayer. I didn't think of it as a prayer at the time, but I was just sitting there thinking, I really want to honor this gift. I want to share. I'll write down everything I hear. But, gee, I sure need a job to support me while I do it. And 3 weeks later, I had a job at Castle Rock Entertainment. The second day they were in business. And worked for the same man for the next 18 years. Wherever he went, I went, followed him, and made enough money to be able to retire 18 years later. It was like a miracle. And it was like the universe was saying to me, okay, if you're ready, I'm ready, and here we go. And it was an amazing turnaround.
Can I ask you? I mean, you're so talented. You're articulate. You're a very beautiful woman. How is it that you were almost homeless?
Well, I think that it's because of my choices, and I think it's because I had a very negative, blaming kind of attitude. And I think when you have that kind of an attitude, that you attract people into your life who are all too anxious to do the same to you. To have a negative attitude. I mean, I really believe that's what being here is all about, remembering that we live in this balanced universe where the universe thinks everything you put out there is love. So if you are always being negative, then the universe thinks that your interpretation of love is being negative, and it sends you back a lot of negativity. And that's how, I mean, I think that once you understand this perfect balance in which the universe lives, you really have a handle on turning almost anything around in your life.
Now, I know that spirituality plays a very strong role in your life. Why do you think embracing that has been so helpful, and why would you encourage other people to incorporate that into their ways of being in the world?
Well, I think spirituality has to do with God within all of us and acknowledging that we all have that power and that essence within us. And it's about listening to it, because we all have two voices in our head. It's the one the voice that tries to discourage us from doing what we love and being kind to other people and being in a positive attitude. And we have the voice that tells us everything is fine, life is wonderful, you're here, you're experimenting, you're growing, life is exactly the way it needs to be. But we're the ones who decide which voice to listen to. I mean, truthfully, Lisa, I used to think that thoughts came into my head, and I couldn't get rid of them. I mean, it's like, what am I supposed to do? The thoughts in my head, I can't get rid of it. I can't do anything with it. There it is. But that's not really true. You can replace positive thoughts with from being negative. You can think positively. It's up to you, though. Nobody else can do it for you.
Right, and I think what you're implying is, though, that in part it does take a conscious awareness, right?
Yeah.
And I guess maybe even backing up, it's maybe letting people know that they really do have a choice in terms of what they're, the direction that they're going, and whether or not they're going to hold on to a thought that is destructive versus finding the courage to begin to replace that with a thought that is more forward-moving for them.
Yes. In fact, this morning I just saw someone on a Facebook page said, I have a sickness called dysphoria, and I don't know how to get rid of it. So I'd never heard the word before. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it means feeling depressed and unhappy. And so I wrote back and I said, well, you know, if you're feeling this way, the opposite is what's going to heal it. You know, it's sort of an obvious thing, but we don't think we have the power to actually change our thoughts or to change or think differently. And we do. We have the power. We have the power to do that. We are totally in charge of what we carry around inside of us, in our minds and in our hearts.
I think, you know, Betsy, I think for some people who were raised in loving families where they got a lot of nurturance and they really have a positive sense of self, I think that that's a fairly easy mindset to hold on to. But I can tell you, being a trauma therapist, that when somebody has had a lifetime of experience where they're beaten down, where their thoughts and their feelings have been invalidated, I think at least in the early stages of this, it's really difficult, you know, to help people to see that they do have options and choices, because they have genuinely been victimized and beaten down and disempowered. What I love about your model is it's a model of empowerment, but my sense is that not everybody, based on their prior life experiences, can easily buy into the idea that they are, in fact, empowered.
Well, I can only say that I feel that I had that experience also as I was growing up.
Yeah.
And being beaten down and being told I was never good enough, never doing anything right, every choice I made was wrong. I also had that, and I believed it. So I know that you can truly turn it around and believe something else. But it is a conscious decision to say, wait a minute, is this really the way I want my life to be? Do I want to live the rest of my life? That's what I had to ask myself. Do I want to live the rest of my life in this situation? And I didn't. And it also is, you know, it sounds like it's difficult sometimes when you say to somebody, you must take responsibility for where you are. But unless you do, you continue to be a victim, because if you don't think you're powerful enough to change where you are, you're leaving it up to other people to change your life for you. And that's a very victimized kind of attitude. And when you have that victimized attitude and you think that other people are responsible for turning your life around, then you hate everybody who doesn't turn it around for you. And it's just a constant ongoing kind of downward snowball, gaining momentum. And you don't have to be homeless to turn it around. I mean, and every day is a practice of this philosophy, because you always need to remind yourself. It's like you have to get into a new habit. I think that maybe it's true that my parents or my one parent started a pattern in me, and I began to believe it, and I lived that pattern over and over again. But it is possible to change a habit. You have to become aware of the habit before you can change it. So after you are aware of the habit, then you can say, well, I'd like to start a new habit, and this is how I have to do it. And then you do it over and over and over, just like you did the negative over and over and over, until it becomes the way you live.
You're exactly right. And, you know, on past shows, we've talked a lot about this concept of neuroplasticity and how the repetition of new behaviors can override, ingrained old habituated behaviors that may not be as healthy. So from a neuroscientific standpoint, you are exactly right. And for me, that's one of the more exciting realizations in the field of psychotherapy, you know, that somebody can come into therapy having done something destructive for 30 years, and yet we know that they're still capable of changing, which is very exciting.
Yes, and it's also about changing your identity to a certain extent, because if you've lived as a victim, you sort of have that victimization identity, and you worry what you will be if you don't have that anymore. but what you will be is an autonomous being, making your own choices and loving your life and making positive and thinking positive ideas and then creating from those positive ideas.
Yeah, you're exactly right. So let's talk about your book a little bit. I know that I love the way you designed it because you've kind of divided it into mini chapters that address what happens if, and then you cover actually a very wide range of potential scenarios. And I think it would be fun to look at some of those issues and then give you the opportunity to share with our listeners your suggestions about how they can effectively address some of those what-if situations. So let's start with this first one because I think it's so common. And that is, what happens if you believe that you need to be perfect?
Yeah. Well, you reach for an impossible goal. That's the first thing that happens because energy, we're all energy. Energy is never static or the same. You and I are not the same energy now that we were 10 minutes ago. We are
right.
Constantly expanding, constantly changing, constantly evolving, constantly evolving, and therefore there is no perfect state to achieve. And when you think you have to be perfect, then you get down on yourself because you don't think you deserve this or you don't think that deserve that because you're not good enough, you're not bold enough, you're not thin enough, fat enough, and all those things we do to ourselves that make us feel badly about ourselves. So we're not perfect. We're never going to be perfect because we are constantly, constantly changing and expanding and evolving. And we're constantly even changing the truth that we believe in our hearts about what is real and what is not real. And therefore, the only perfect thought is that we're all perfectly wonderful exactly the way we are. And, you know, mm-hmm. I don't anticipate being around someone who's trying to be perfect, so I can't imagine why anyone would want that from me.
I like that. That's actually a very good point. And part of what you're suggesting is we really have to be willing to let go of the concept of perfection in human beings, right? Because it doesn't exist for us.
It doesn't exist, but we are all perfectly wonderful for the journey we are on. I believe mm-hmm. that we choose who we are and we choose our influences and we choose our challenges because when we do the choosing before we get here, we have the soul's overview of everything that we've ever experienced. And so we have that knowledge and wisdom to know exactly what we need to find this lifetime, something we didn't find in a past lifetime. And so therefore we set up the challenges that we think will help us find it. And so from that point of view, yes, everything is perfect because the soul knows exactly what we need to live, who we need to find, and how it needs to unfold. How we deal with it is the growth we find.
Right. And what I like is, you're offering a different definition of perfect.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Which I think is important. And does the same hold true if we think that we need to find the perfect partner, the perfect mate?
Well, absolutely, because there is no perfect mate out there for you. You always find a reflection of yourself. So mm-hmm. if you are happy with the person that you are mated to, then you are in perfect sync with that person and you like the qualities in that person because you have those qualities. When people come to me and they say they want to find the perfect mate, I always recommend the same thing. Sit down with a piece of paper and write down all the qualities that you want the perfect mate to have. We want them to be kind, considerate, respectful of your opinions, respectful of your career, whatever. Write all those things down that you want that person to have. And then start one at a time, start living those qualities because unless uh-huh. you are living those qualities, the person you're trying to find is all finding somebody else, not you. You have to be... You have to be the person you want the other person to be so that you attract that energy back into your life.
I like that. I like that idea of after they write it out, encouraging them to begin to walk down that road.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a whole bunch of other what happens ifs, and you'll continue to share your wisdom with us. So please stay with us, and we will be right back.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Overcome and transcend trauma with guidance from Lisa Ferrance, president and founder of the Institute for Advanced Psychotherapy Training and Education, and author of the book Treating Self-Destructive Behaviors in Trauma Survivors. Now in its third printing, Lisa Ferrance's book for clinicians offers creative treatment options, assessment tools, and new ways of understanding self-destructive behavior in trauma survivors. Trauma experts say,
Lisa Ferrance's book is a rare gift to clinicians.
Sound inventive approaches to help clients discover alternative ways to self-soothe.
And
far and away the best book written on this complex topic.
Order Lisa Ferrance's book online and receive a 20% discount by visiting www.lisaferrance.com. That's www.lisaferrance.com.
Caring for someone with autism can be full of challenges and triumphs. Wherever you are on your autism journey, we all benefit from good information and guidance. Join host Rob Haupt every week for a friendly show that will leave you inspired and informed. Tune in to Autism Spectrum Radio. Our guests include parents, advocates, and experts to discuss current experiences, treatments, and breakthroughs for those living with autism. Listen every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned into Inspired Journeys, overcoming adversity and thriving. To connect with Lisa Ferrance or her guest today, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to lisa@lisaferrance.com. Now, back to Inspired Journeys.
Welcome back. We're talking with Betsy Otter-Thompson about what happens if, and we're giving you some tidbits from her most recent book that she has written on that exact subject. And I really like this book because the what happens if are, I think, some of the more common things that all of us wonder about, obsess about, waste energy thinking about. So Betsy can offer you some ways to kind of work through and let go of some of the what-ifing that you may be doing. So Betsy, let's move on to the next little mini chapter, and that is, what happens if you make a mistake?
Well, this is how I define a mistake. I see it as an act without love, and then I know how to correct it. Because I don't think that anything we live is a mistake unless we don't see the growth or the lesson in it that it's trying to take to show us. And I don't think, for instance, if I believe that the world is perfectly balanced, then mistakes don't exist in a world that's defined by this perfect balance. We are always finding ourselves and the people we face, and everybody that comes to us is an opportunity for us to learn more about ourselves. And so there's no mistakes that are happening. There's just reflection that is happening, and these people are helping us. They're a gift. I think that when we came here, we were thrilled to be coming to a place where we'd always have our answer, because the answer would always be in the person in front of us, and they were teaching us what we needed to know about our own behavior. Incompatible energy does not join you. In some way, there's a compatibility. It may not be a picture of compatibility that the illusion shows you, but it's an emotional compatibility in some way. For the insecurities that you have, they are mirrored in the person who is with you, and the insecurities they have. The insecurities may not be exactly the same, but the emotional attachment to them and the way that you act out in your behavior because of it is the same.
So the first thing I'm hearing you say is that you're reframing mistake as opportunity for growth,
yes.
Opportunity to learn something.
Yes, always. Because when you want to always see the positive, because that's what we're here for, is to grow and to learn and to expand our hearts and for our energy to become more expansive and more filled with love and light. And how are you going to do that if you're always finding what you think is wrong? It's just a way of showing you what you need to find that is right. It's so easy to focus on the things in our life that we don't think are right or we think that need to change, instead of focusing on all the things that we have done right and all the accomplishments we have made. It's just a habit that we get into, and it's no different for me than it is for anybody else. It's that sliding back into, this is what I should have that I don't have, or this is what I should be doing that I'm not doing. I have to constantly remind myself that I'm doing what I need to do, and I have to trust that if I go with the flow of my life, everything is exactly the way it's supposed to be.
You know, what I really like about that is that you are, to such an important degree, you're taking the shame and the self-blame out of, you know, one's approach to life and one's behavioral choices, and really bringing in compassion, which I think is so healing for people to be able to reframe the negative stuff and as you suggest, to take more time to really notice their strengths, notice the positives.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's like a larger cultural thing, that we're just so conditioned to focus on what I call the yeah, but? So in other words, I'll compliment a client on something that they've said or done, and their almost immediate response is, yeah, but I still haven't done that.
Yeah, I think there is a cultural thing, and I think it's a habit like everything else in our culture and in our the whole sort of state of humanity today. We jump to the negative first instead of what's positive. Even when we're reading magazines, it's bringing up the unpleasant things instead of the pleasant things that people have accomplished. You know, what about all the good things they have done? What about all the things that have accomplished that have been positive? We just sort of push that out the window. We just sort of forget it and focus on something that sometimes makes us feel better about ourselves, because then they're human too. But the more you focus on the positive in the other people, the more you're going to attract positive people back to you, and the more positive you're going to feel. And so it is like a habit you need to form, to remember that you don't want to say anything about other people that you wouldn't like hearing said about you. It's really that simple. Not doing anything towards other people that you wouldn't want them to do towards you. You need to be the person you want other people to be, if you want to attract people that you like in your life and who respect you and who are compassionate towards you. Then you need to have those qualities towards other people.
I think that's a good segue into the little chapter that you write about what happens if you're critical.
Yes, and to be critical is, first of all, it's to make an assumption that you know something about somebody else's life that they don't know.
Mm.
That some way you're wiser about their life than their soul is about their life, which is a very arrogant point of view to take. Telling someone they're not this or they're not that, or they're not doing this right or they're not doing that right, or they aren't as much of this as they need to be. How do you know?
Yeah.
You know, how do we know what other people need to be while they're here? The truth is we have no knowledge whatsoever about the paths that other people have planned for themselves. We have no knowledge of that at all. We don't know what they lived before they came into this life. We don't know what goals they have. We don't know how long they want to be here. We don't know any of that information. And so to criticize another person for this or that or the other is, first of all, whatever you put out, you feel. So if you put out criticism, you feel criticized. And when, you know, somebody comes up to me and they're asking for help and they say, well, I was at work today and I heard a lot of criticism and I sure didn't like it and I hate the person who gave it to me. Well, the answer is you wouldn't have felt that so criticized if you hadn't been in a mode of giving criticism in some way, maybe not to that person, but to somebody else. You had been a critical, and so therefore you attracted the critical person back to you, who was the gift to show you yourself. And that's always the motivation that works for me. I mean, I think there are a lot of airy-fairy ideas you can say about something, but when it comes right down to the nitty-gritty, the fact that you create something for yourself is what really motivates you to act in a certain way. I want that back, therefore that is who I am going to be.
So, you know, I'm really following everything that you're saying here, but here's where it gets a little bit tricky for me, and I kind of need your assistance in maybe disentangling this a bit. Because, again, bringing this back to the work that I do, where I'm working with people who have been, you know, profoundly abused or traumatized or mistreated as they've grown up, are you suggesting that the person who has been abused is the person who's abusive towards others?
Okay, I have to put it into bigger perspective to explain how I feel about this.
Okay,
I don't think there's any difference to the universe between today and tomorrow and a past lifetime and this lifetime, because there's no time out of this illusion that we live in. So what we lived in the past, we create for the future. Now, whether we have to create that for another lifetime because it didn't happen in the lifetime where you were critical, then it happens in the next lifetime where you have to experience what you made another person feel. I've read a lot about people who've passed over And they say that they do their life review. And what happens when they do their life review is they have to experience all the feelings that they gave to other people, all the feelings they made other people feel. There's this guy named Danny, I can't remember his last name, but he was a person who worked for the government and went into foreign countries and killed people for the government, for our government.
Uh-huh.
And he was struck down by lightning, and he was dead for 9 minutes or something, or 20 minutes. It was a really long time. And he said what he had to do was go back, and he had to go through all the experiences of suffering, the agony that the people in the family of the people of the man he had killed suffered. He had to feel all that emotion. And so I believe that it doesn't have to necessarily happen in this lifetime, but it happens. And so I believe that for myself personally, that I, in a past lifetime, must have been very critical, and must have been part of my personality, because I experienced that in my early life too. I experienced that criticism and that you're not this and you're not that and you're not good enough and nothing is ever good enough. So I must have been that kind of person before. And it didn't play out in the past lifetime, so it played out in this lifetime. Because today or tomorrow or next lifetime is all the same to the soul. It just cares that you grow. How you grow and when you grow, it doesn't have to happen at a certain time. The soul wants it to happen because the soul wants you to evolve, wants to pick a lifetime in which that can happen and the growth can happen. And if you look back and you ask yourself, you know, one of the things that I always recommend is that you find what was good that happened from going through that experience. And so, and not only does it help you, but it helps to change the quality of the relationship that you had. And I did it with my mother, and I asked myself, if I chose my mother, which I came to believe, then I said, why did I choose her? Then there must have been a good reason that I chose her, because my soul isn't a dummy. It's choosing people for good reasons. And so then I asked myself, well, what good happened because of this thing I went through with her? And I realized that because of the fact that we couldn't agree on anything, that we had a different philosophy in life, we saw everything in a different lens, through a different lens. So it was just a black and white kind of antipathy. Mm-hmm. The very fact that that happened was what pushed me to find a philosophy that did work for me. And when I found that philosophy that did work for me, it changed my whole entire life. And then I could go back and say, well, I can forgive. I can forgive and move on because she was the motivator that got me where I needed to go. And I could even take it past that. And I could say, why do I need to forgive somebody who was the gift to me to push me towards where I needed to go for my purpose in life and being here?
There's much of what you're saying that makes a lot of sense to me, and certainly I'm all about trying to help people find meaning in their painful past experiences, definitely focusing on ways that they can learn and grow from those past experiences. It could be that we won't totally agree on the issue of somebody who grew up profoundly sexually abused, abuse somebody in another lifetime, the karmic cyclical nature of that. That's a little bit trickier.
But I don't think you have to tell the person that. All you need to say is, how have you grown from this happening?
Yeah, that for sure.
And you focus on the positive things that have happened to you, or the things you have learned, the compassion you have found for others,
right,
the understanding you have found for others. All that is all positive. And if you focus on that, and you continue to focus on that, and you go back to it again and again, finding what it is you learned, the other loses its importance.
Okay. So I'm definitely with you on that.
We're
on the same page with that piece of it. Good.
Yeah. You don't have to bring up the past lifetimes. Lots of people don't believe in past lifetimes, and I don't think you have to believe in past lifetimes to understand what's happening in this lifetime. You just have to know that your soul is not a dummy. Your soul has not chosen for you in a bad way. It has chosen for you in a way that it believes will lead you to wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I like that. So what happens if you don't love the choices that loved ones make or significant people in your life are making?
Well, nothing happens if you stop loving the choices of those you love unless you stop loving them because of their choices.
Hmm.
I don't think we have to understand the choices of other people. We only have to understand our own choices. And how can we really understand their choices? They're choosing what they think. I mean, I truly believe, Lisa, that every choice I ever made was because I thought it was going to bring me love. It didn't always bring me love, but
I thought
it was going to bring me love, and I think that's everyone's motivation.
I agree. Yes.
It's about letting go and letting people find their own way. Really, you can. Especially this happens with parents and children. You know, you bring them up and you have expectations. You can't help but have expectations, although it's not healthy to have them. You have them anyway,
right?
And they don't always have the same expectations for themselves that you do. And we have to trust that they're finding their own way. And I think it's true of friends. It's true of every relationship, really.
And I think it connects back to what you said earlier, which I really agree with. And when you said it, it was simplistic, but it made so much sense. It's almost like we don't really have the right to criticize or judge what others are choosing or doing, because we can never really fully appreciate or understand what their journey is about.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
They came here and they agreed to play a certain role for themselves, for the benefit of themselves, and also probably for the benefit of the people around them, because sometimes the people you love give you the biggest challenges. I mean, I certainly look back now and I think probably when this life is over, I'll think my mother was the biggest gift of all.
Yeah. Which, you know, Betsy, when you get there, you know you have true healing. That's for sure. What happens? Let's do one before the next break. What happens if you never think you have enough money? And boy, are there a lot of people walking around, I think, with that belief.
Well, what happens is that you live in thoughts of lack. And then the lack is like the snowball going down the hill, gaining momentum. I always say, that first of all, you have to ask what your definition of enough is. And what does enough mean to you? Then ask if you understand the purpose of the enough that you already have. And are you doing, are you using that enough to further your purpose? Because if you're not using what you do have to further your purpose, why would other people be attracted to you to add to that purpose if you're not even doing it? You know, it's like I belong to some groups on Facebook, and some of the Facebooks have no participation by even the people who started the Facebook, and want to know why I'm not continuing to participate.
Right. And I like what you're saying again, that rather than focusing on what you don't have, to really focus on what you do have and what are you doing with what you have.
Yes.
Which is a very nice reframe for that. What happens if you emotionally withhold from other people?
Well, you miss what you lose what you desire, because it's the old message to the universe again about if you withhold from others, then you are withholding from yourself. You're attracting people to you who will withhold from you, and it's the old idea again about being the person you want other people to be. And in this chapter, it talks about the how the earth nourishes us on a day-to-day basis, not expecting anything back from us, just being the earth that it needs to be, healing itself in a way that it needs to heal itself. And if we behave a certain way towards the earth, if, for instance, if we trash the oceans don't suffer. They regroup through tides and climate reversals. We're the ones who can't enjoy the oceans.
Right.
And if we pollute the air doesn't suffer. The wind velocities reverse these deficiencies over time, and we're the ones who suffer the toxicity and weather upheavals as nature takes care of itself. And so I think that nature shows us how life works for all of us, that if you withhold from others and you don't love them in a way that you want to be loved, well, you're without that love. That's the way it is.
Yeah, so in the end, you're the one who suffers, not the other person.
Yeah, you're the one who suffers.
Yeah, that makes sense. And this is an interesting one. What happens if you sit around and do nothing?
the short answer is you rest while you think. We're in this world where doing is has such a big emphasis on it. But you know what? I meditate, and more happens in my meditation most of the time than ever happens when I'm not meditating.
I believe that.
I do. I think that we're in this culture that that rates our importance by what we're doing, or what people see us doing, or what people think is important that we're doing, when really the important stuff is all happening within, and nobody sees that but you.
And again, what you're offering there, which I think is so powerful, is a reframe, because when you first hear that idea of sitting around and doing nothing, it sounds so negative.
Yeah.
And what you're doing is shifting that and saying, actually, there's opportunity in that that is positive.
Yes.
To just be.
I think when I was writing this book, I thought of all the struggles that I had had and how I had normally followed into the negative that we just talked about. And so it was wonderful, sort of, I was just asking Spirit, you know, what happens if I do this? And then Spirit came through with all the positive and all the ways.
Yeah.
The shift in focus, you know, the shift to look at it differently.
I think that's the wonderful consistency in this book and the way that you respond to all of those what-if scenarios that I think is, you know, very impressive, that what on the surface sounds negative or distressing, you've, you know, very masterfully been able to find that positive shift. And again, I think it takes away the shame, it takes away the self-blame, and then there's a lot of self-compassion that comes through, which I think is so healing in and of itself. So for me, that's one of the really inspiring things about this book, that you've taken these things and really kind of turned them on their head, you know, in a way that we can think about them differently.
Yeah.
Which is really lovely.
Yeah, thank you. It's been very helpful to me, too.
Yeah. So we're going to take another quick break, and then we will return with more what-if scenarios. Please stay with us.
Overcome and transcend trauma with guidance from Lisa Ferrance, president and founder of the Institute for Advanced Psychotherapy Training and Education, and author of the book, Treating Self-Destructive Behaviors in Trauma Survivors. Now in its third printing, Lisa Ferrance's book for clinicians offers creative treatment options, assessment tools, and new ways of understanding self-destructive behavior in trauma survivors. Trauma experts say,
Lisa Ferrance's book is a rare gift to clinicians.
Sound inventive approaches to help clients discover alternative ways to self-soothe.
And
far and away the best book written on this complex topic.
Order Lisa Ferrance's book online and receive a 20% discount by visiting www.lisaferrance.com. That's www.lisaferrance.com. Cancer is not something to be taken lightly, but instead of being talked at by doctors, medical providers, and others, wouldn't it be nice to hear from a host who has worked at the Cancer Coalface for 38 years as a caregiver, supporter for 14,000 patients, and who has had the experience of having a life-threatening condition herself? You will hear the stories of survivors and other people who work in breakthrough cancer medicine. Navigating the Cancer Maze with host Grace Galler will help you with the facts, planning, and grief experienced with different forms and stages of cancer. Listen every Friday at 12 noon U.S. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Helping you make informed decisions for your life. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned into Inspired Journeys, Overcoming Adversity and Thriving. To connect with Lisa Ferrance or her guest today, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to lisa@lisaferrance.com. Now, back to Inspired Journeys.
Welcome back. We're talking with Betsy Otter Thompson. And Betsy, before we move forward, I'd love for you to give our listening audience maybe some contact information, ways that they can reach you, and where they can find your books.
Well, they can reach me at www.betsythompson.com. And they can go there and they can find my books there. I'm also on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Goodreads. And I'm on YouTube.
You're all over. You're a busy lady.
I am.
You have fully embraced the social media world.
I have, yes.
Good for you. I still like to say that I'm in the Flintstones generation, but good for you. So let's talk about a couple of more what ifs. What happens if you insist that everyone agrees with you?
When you insist on agreement. Well, the quick answer or the short answer is disagreement reigns. Because when agreement becomes important to you, you might as well get used to a disagreement, because as soon as you want others to agree with you, you attract those who want agreement from you.
Hmm. And that becomes a losing proposition, I assume.
Yes. I mean, first of all, why does anyone need to agree with you?
Yeah, there's the real question.
Yeah, I mean, there is this world with multi-millions of options, multi-millions of interests, multi-millions of philosophies, multi-millions of politics, of religions, everything. Why does anyone have to agree with you? If you have one of those that brings you love, it's the right one for you.
It's a nice way to think about it. Good. And this next one, which I think, you know, half my caseload lives in this place, and that is, what happens when you live in ifs?
I love that chapter, too. I had such fun writing that chapter because, as you know, if you read it, that I fill it with all the what ifs that I ask, and Spirit gives me these one-liners back that I just love. And the thing is that if you embrace lovely ifs, you feel happy, and if you embrace depressing ifs, you feel miserable. You could almost say it's what the whole book is about in a way, because mm-hmm. I'm taking the negative if when I ask the question, and then Spirit gives me the positive if to think about instead.
And, yes.
And it is like you overpower the negative ifs with positive ifs. I mean, because in your mind, you can't hold two thoughts that are incompatible at the same time. You're either in the positive mode or you're in the negative mode. And so you have to get into the one that you like and think of it that way. And I don't know, I sometimes read a couple of the what-ifs that that I like so much that are in the chapter. Would you like if I did a couple of those?
Please, because I think they're wonderful also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's see here. What happens if the person I love doesn't love me? What if you start loving the person who does love you?
Yeah.
What if I lack enough discipline to succeed? What if success is the discipline of loving what is?
Yep.
And what if I'm lonely and nobody befriends me? What if friendship is the love you give to the lonely? What if I'm trapped in a bad marriage? What if the bad part is where you forget to love? Mm-hmm. And so that's what this chapter is so focused on. I sometimes think I just want to write a book. It just has those, one right after the other.
Well, you know what? It's tremendously powerful because, you know, we talk a lot about encouraging people to shift their cognitions. But in my experience, sometimes unless they can read it, unless we actually give them a little bit of a script, you know, they're so habituated to the negative way of thinking that it doesn't come so easily. So I love that chapter too, because it's right there for people. You've kind of given them the jump start, so to speak, so that they can begin to refocus and turn some of these negatives, you know, upside down and think about them in a positive way. And I think that these prompts are really important for people who have been so habituated to think negatively.
Yes, and there's a little bit in the chapter that I'd like to share too, because I think it's something that every one of us have done at one time or another. You get into this, you go to a party and you get into this negative thing about what if the person I'm supposed to be talking to can't find me because I'm here talking to this person?
Ah, yeah.
What if there's a better party to go to but I won't find it because I'm here stuck at this one? What if I'm making a fool of myself with the person in front of me? What if he has an opinion that counts because he knows how to counter mine? You know, uh-huh. What if the host is sorry she invited me because I'm such a sorry guest? And, you know, had a better time if I'd stayed home? And guaranteed, if you listen to this pest voice long enough, you'll wish you had.
I mean, absolutely. Yeah, that puts you in a really negative place really quickly.
Yes, and I think that there isn't a person in this world who hasn't done that to themselves at a party sometime, one time or another.
Right. No, you're right. And again, I think, you know what, just helping to bring this into conscious awareness is maybe the first step in the right direction. You know, having people take that half a step back just to realize, yeah, I do think in that way.
Yeah.
I do frame my experiences, you know, going always to the negative assumption.
Yeah.
You know this, that it's so habitual for people, they don't even realize they're doing it.
I know that's true, because I went through it and I didn't do any of these wonderful positive what ifs before. I just stayed where I thought I was categorized by the parental opinion, and I believed it and I lived it. And so, yes, I know what that's all about. And I do know that no one can change it for you but you.
Yes, that is true enough. I'm curious, out of all the issues that you write about, which ones do you think are the most challenging for people? Is there a hierarchy of more challenging, less challenging in your experience?
I think it depends on the person. You know, what is challenging to one might not be to another. But mm-hmm. I guess one of the ones that we all share is the one about disease thought, because disease has a big presence in life today on Earth. And I think that's a big what if. You know, what if I stay in disease thought? If you do, you bring dis-ease to your body. Because everything is reflective in this illusion in which we live, and that means the body is too, and the body is giving us a message of what needs tension in our hearts and our minds by what it does in the body to give that message to us. I have mm-hmm. a wonderful personal experience that I could tell you about.
Well,
when I came back from California, I was, again, being bombarded by all the family issues. I'd been away for 18 years, and then when I came back, it all started festering in me again, all the old resentments and grudgments about how my family had reacted to the decisions that I had made. And I just really was holding on to those feelings, those grudges and resentments, for three solid months, living them over and over again. And all of a sudden, I got up one morning, and I had a lump in my back. And I have a history of cancer in my family, so I went to the doctor that day. And she felt the lump, and she said, it's here. So I want you to go in for an MRI tomorrow morning. And I said, okay. And I went home and I thought, okay, now I have to put my money where my mouth is and ask myself, you know, what is this all about? And so I went to Louise Hay's book, Heal the Body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And lumps in the body were about grudges and resentments.
least you were textbook.
Yeah, so I was textbook. So I did a meditation that night, and during the meditation, I asked myself the question I always try to ask is, what was positive that resulted from their attitudes? And it was really their attitudes were what drove me to leave where I was and to go somewhere else and to search for what I needed to find. And if it hadn't been for their attitudes, I'm not sure that I would have, because they would have been a receptive nest for me, mm-hmm. which they were not. And so I was forced to go somewhere else and to just leave this particular area at that time. And they were the motivators for me. And as I started to thank them in my meditation for what they had done for me, which really was a gift, because so much happened that was positive for me after I left, that I began to thank them and say, you know, thank you for being the motivator. Thank you for the way you behaved, because I really needed that to move me on in life. I really needed to get myself in gear and do something else. And as I started to release them and say thank you, it was a very deep meditation, and in the middle of the meditation, I felt this stream of creamy light start in my toes and come all the way up through my body and up to my head, and I just thought it was the most amazing feeling I'd ever felt. I can't describe it, but it was amazing to me. And so I thought, wow. I mean, I was just like in awe. So I went in for the MRI, and the doctor had told me she'd call me in the afternoon, and she called me, and she said, well, it didn't show up on the MRI, so I want you to go in for more tests. And I said, well, before I do that, I have to tell you what happened. And so I told her what I'd done last night and what happened, and she said, well, come in this afternoon, let me take a look. And, of course, when I went in, the lump was gone. And so to me, it is about the body saying to me, oh, she gets it. She gets it. So there's no reason for the lump to be. She got the message. It's over. It's passed. She's moved through it. And so the lump was gone. And I really do believe that the body is this reflective energy that is a constant gift to us, telling us exactly what it is that needs attention, what it is that needs our what area of our life needs more love, where we need to release, forgive, and move on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, what you're saying is very in keeping with so many of the sensory motor therapists and making that mind-body connection and really believing that the body does talk to us. And again, I think part of the take-home point in terms of your work is this idea of sort of a mindful awareness, paying attention to our thoughts, paying attention to sensation on the body, and just in closing, again, what I love about your work is a willingness to take what on the surface can seem negative or destructive or overwhelming or despairing, and really finding the courage to hang in there, to look at it, to learn from it, and to come in with a new assumption, and that is, I can get something positive out of this.
Yeah.
Which is a wonderful new kind of assumption and expectation that I would love our listening audience to take from today, that even when we're dealing with things that are very painful, very difficult, if we can bring the assumption that from that there can be healing, there can be growth, there can be insight, I think that that's a real way to inspire people.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, Betsy, for sharing your wisdom with us. Again, I encourage people to go online to access your books. They're fascinating. They're provocative. They're very interesting. Thank you for being with us. I appreciate your taking the time to do that. And to my listening audience, thank you so much for joining us every week. I know you have what it takes to take care of yourself. And until we meet again, be well.
Thank you for listening to Inspired Journeys, Overcoming Adversity and Thriving. Please join Lisa Ferrance again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. May the next week be a positive, life-changing one for you.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Now there's a new destination for video content, voiceamerica.tv, just like our radio channels and so much more. Voice America Variety, Health and Wellness,